Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop for this Monday, April 28th. I'm Ray Graff. Support for Medical Monday comes from Southwestern Vermont Medical Center, now providing vascular care in Bennington with the surgical team from Dartmouth Hitchcock Medical Center. Learn more at svmc.org/vascular. Joining us this afternoon is Dr. David Perlmutter, an ophthalmologist with Perlmutter Eye Center in Albany on Clifton Park. Dr. Perlmutter specializes in cataract surgery, glaucoma treatment, and retinal diseases. He performs laser and surgical treatment of cataracts and glaucoma, and he performs laser and intravitreal injections to treat medical diseases of the retina. If you have a question for Dr. Perlmutter, give us a call, 800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. Back after the news. Hello again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. It's Medical Monday. We welcome back Dr. David Perlmutter today, a board-certified ophthalmologist at Perlmutter Eye Center in Albany, Clifton Park, and Troy. He also has affiliations with Albany Med, St. Peter's, and Wills Eye Hospital. Dr. Perlmutter specializes in customized cataract surgery, glaucoma treatment, retinal diseases. He performs laser and surgical treatment of cataracts and glaucoma, laser intravitreal injections to treat medical diseases of the retina. For the last few years, in a national survey, Dr. Perlmutter was ranked by Newsweek as one of the top 150 ophthalmologists in the U.S. To be part of the conversation today, give us a shout, 800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551, or you can email us at voxpop@wamc.org. Dr. Perlmutter, welcome back. How are you?
Thanks. I'm having a great day. It's sunny outside.
It's finally. You know, it's funny. The weekends are lousy, and then you get back to the work week, and it's beautiful.
Yeah.
How are things over at the practice?
Things have been great. It's always nice to do what we do. We appreciate being able to take care of people. We're excited. We have a new doctor joining the practice in November
who does
cataract surgery and neuro-ophthalmology. So it's
now,
exciting.
What's neuro-ophthalmology?
Neuro-ophthalmology is a subspecialty that deals with both neurologic conditions that affect the eyes and also diseases of the optic nerve in the eye.
Okay, so the optic nerve, as I understand it, and as you might know, I'm not a doctor in any way, the optic nerve is basically connected straight to the brain.
Yeah, my favorite analogy for this is, and we're going to lose this analogy as we lose those set-top cable boxes, but my favorite analogy is you've got the cable box, you've got the TV, and then you've got the wire that connects the cable box to the TV. And so the TV is what you're seeing.
Right.
The cable box is the eyeball itself, you know, getting the information, and then it's sending that information along the optic nerve, which is the cable wire, to the TV. And so diseases of the optic nerve cause problems with the cable wire.
And interesting.
So you can have a healthy eye otherwise. You can have a healthy brain. But if that cable wire gets damaged, then you can't see very well.
So interesting. Can I get the premium channels on that, if possible? The number here is 800-348-2551. We wanted to talk a little bit about new drugs and an encouraging sign for a dry macular degeneration.
Yeah, it's an exciting time for ophthalmologists. A lot of times the eye is the forefront of drug development because we have the ability to look directly inside the organ and actually see in very fine detail what's going on, whereas in other parts of the body, you have to rely on blood work or MRI imaging, which is different, or ultrasound, and you don't get as much detail. So we have the ability to see really fine detail. And one of the things that we've been working with in the last year and a half or so is our treatments for dry macular degeneration.
Which, now explain just briefly for those who don't know what that is. What happens in dry macular degeneration and also in wet?
So dry macular degeneration is a slow loss of function or degeneration of the retinal tissue in the macular area of the retina. So that's a mouthful.
Yeah.
But the retina lines the inside back wall of the eye, and it receives all the information, all the light from the world outside, and then it converts it into an electrical signal and sends it along the optic nerve to the brain, and the brain tells you what you see. And the center part of the retina is the macular area. And so macular degeneration is a condition where people get slow damage to that central part of the retina. And for most people, it is an extremely slow process. And for most people who walk around with mild macular degeneration, they don't even notice anything in their vision, and they do just fine. It never affects their life in any given way.
It never progresses to the point where it affects their life?
For most people.
Interesting.
But that's not true for everyone. And for most people who you might have a casual conversation with who mentioned macular degeneration, that's usually someone who's had enough degradation in the health of the retinal tissue over time to start to affect their function with their vision. And for a long time, we didn't have any kind of intervention to actually slow that process down. We did have interventions for a small subset of people who would, on top of that slow degradation, get some swelling or bleeding in the retina, which could cause rapid deterioration, and we could control that with medications for the last couple decades. But in the last year and a half, we have a medication we can inject to slow down the slow degradation. And we don't do it on everyone. It's only really reserved for people who get more advanced and start to really lose some of that tissue to the extent that it'll start to affect their function with their vision.
What are some of the side effects?
So it's an injection in the eye.
Yeah.
So any injection in the eye has a sort of standard set of side effects: irritation, burning. Sometimes the eye gets some blood on the white part of the eye, which is harmless, but, you know, really ruins a photo shoot, you know, for the family photos.
Wear sunglasses. You're good.
And other, you know, less common side effects that can be serious. There's always, any procedure in medicine, there's always a risk of infection, bleeding, things like that. Thankfully, very, very, very rare with injections of medicine into the eye. But, you know, it's a lot of office visits and it's a lot of time for people. So it's, you know, not necessarily a fun process, but we, you know, try to make it as comfortable as possible.
We're joined by Dr. David Perlmutter today from Perlmutter Eye Center in Albany, Clifton Park, and Troy. Well, you mentioned, and you made a great point about the eye being an organ that you can actually investigate without either cutting open the body or doing imaging like that. But in the case of dry macular degeneration, if people are walking around with it, many people who just never have problems and they have it, are you able to detect it early?
So we can see it when we look inside of the eye. For most people, it starts with these little aging deposits that accumulate underneath the retina. And the aging deposits are made of different substances, but include waste products from the retinal cells. And so when we examine an eye and look inside, we can often see, for someone who has macular degeneration, some of those aging deposits. And then we also have specialized diagnostic machinery that can take a detailed image of the retina, and we can look at the detail with resolution that are fractions of a millimeter. So thousandths of a millimeter, you know, 3 to 4 thousandths of a millimeter resolution, looking at details of the retinal tissue, especially in the central part of the retina, and we can look for signs of those aging deposits or signs of tissue deterioration.
But now this is not something that would show up if you go for your yearly eye test at the glasses shop and the optometrist takes a look. They're not going to see this, right?
I think if you have enough of those deposits, it's often visible from a photo or a regular exam.
Mm-hmm.
If you're talking about, you know, more microscopic changes, smaller changes, it might not be as visible just on a zoomed out photograph.
Would you recommend people start checking it at a certain age or just let it ride?
Well, it's, you know, the full term is age-related macular degeneration. So it does tend to get more common as people get older.
Yeah.
So it's not something that, you know, most 20-year-olds are worried about walking around.
Right.
At the same time, you know, as you get older, eye diseases get more common. So we typically see people more frequently as they get older, as opposed to, you know, more sort of like glasses or routine stuff at younger ages.
Yeah. We'll grab a few emails here before we hit the break, Zach, and then we'll take a break and hit the phones. Dr. David Perlmutter is our guest today, 800-348-2551. This email from Chris: I have glaucoma. After years of dutifully adhering to my doctor's recommendations and medications, I have lost the ability to read and drive. On Friday, I listened to an article on DMSO and glaucoma. Do you have any thoughts? There's more. When DMSO gets here, everybody's going to want a dose. And that, of course, is a Bob Dylan reference to Quinn the Eskimo. So very good. Do you have any thoughts on that?
We don't offer it at this time. And
what is it? DMSO.
I would have to take a look at
the. Okay, well, fair enough. It's We'll go to the next one while you're looking that up. This is from Michael. A couple years ago, I was told I needed cataract surgery, so I got it done on one eye, waited for recovery before getting the other eye done. In the meantime, turns out my vision in the eye that was operated on got worse. Went to several ophthalmologists. All said everything was okay. I never got the other eye done because of the results of the first eye. My question, have you heard of this before, and how can I get it corrected? And that's from Mike in Cambridge.
Hi, Mike. It really depends on what the reason is for the vision not being where you expect it to be. I think, you know, in general, people have a certain expectation of what their vision should be. And so if they describe their vision as being blurry, what I interpret that as is my vision is not meeting the expectation of what I think it should be.
Right.
So sometimes it's just a difference in expectation compared to what a reasonable outcome is.
Yeah.
Other times there's something in your eye that's affecting the quality of your vision that may not have been related to the actual surgery itself. And to figure that out, we really need to examine the eye and do a very thorough exam, because it could be anything. It could be anything from the cornea to, you know, film on the lens of the eye, or to a retina problem or an optic nerve problem. There's a long list, and really any part of the eye could be contributing to blurry vision.
So you brought up the film on the lens, and I've heard of this before, that it might happen that after you have that cataract fixed, that there'll be film on the lens and it can be cleaned once and then that's it.
Yeah.
Why only once?
That's a great question. So the cataract is like an M&M. There's the shell, the candy shell, and then the chocolate and the peanut in the middle. Or these days, you know, you have a lot of other options.
Oh, delicious. Thanks for bringing that up.
And when we do cataract surgery, we make an opening in the front part of the shell, and we remove the contents of the shell, which is the cataract, you know, the lens of the eye. It's the chocolate and the peanut. And then once that's out, we put the brand new artificial lens right back into that shell.
Right.
And so the shell then fibrosis or scars down and holds that new artificial lens in place. The back part that we never made that opening in, the back part of the shell can act as a scaffolding for some residual cells that float around, and those cells can grow a sheet of cloudy tissue, or sometimes we'll use the analogy of scar tissue or a film.
Right.
But it's a sheet of cells that are using that back part of the capsule, that back part of the shell, as a scaffolding to grow a cloudy film around the back of the lens. And so with a laser, we remove that film, and what we're really doing is blasting away the scaffolding in the center part of that shell, and it gets the film out of the way, but it also removes the actual scaffolding for the cells that what they were growing on. So most of the, almost always, and you always have to couch everything in medicine, almost always it doesn't come back. There's always rare exceptions to everything, but for the most part, you know, once you do that, then that's it.
Trust me, man, if there's one person in the world who has had to have that more than once, they'll be calling in soon. The number is 800-348-2551. Dr. David Perlmutter is our guest today. It's Ophthalmology. We'll be back. National treasure right there, Quincy Jones on Vox Pop, 800-348-2551. That's the number. Dr. David Perlmutter joins us on this edition of Medical Monday. All right. During the break, Dr. Perlmutter did some research on dim sum, or what is it that the guy wrote about?
There is one down the street, Ray.
DMSO is what he wrote. So what is it?
Looks like DMSO stands for dimethyl sulfoxide.
Oh, delicious.
And it's a, I'll read you the AI overview, which is a colorless, odorless liquid used as a solvent and a potential therapeutic agent. So when it comes to, we'll put this in the category of nutritional or environmental interventions. With glaucoma, we really don't have any strong clinical trial data for any particular environmental intervention. And so while we can never say that something doesn't, saying there isn't data for it doesn't mean that it doesn't work, but it also doesn't mean that it does work. And so, you know, we could find out if we had a really nice clinical trial over time that it turns out something works well, and we could also find out it doesn't work well.
Right.
But I do caution people, because there's taking something that doesn't have any real strong clinical data, you can hurt yourself.
Well, I mean, this is a solvent. Is this something that you should be ingesting, or do you not ingest it? I mean, I don't know anything about this stuff. All right, let's just move on. The number here is 800-348-2551. That's the number. It's Dr. David Perlmutter today, and let's start in South Fallsburg. Joseph. Joseph, you're on.
Thank you. Dr. Perlmutter, I had a LASIK procedure about 40 years ago, and it was fine. And then about 15 years ago, I began getting a stabbing pain in my left eye. I was sent to the eye hospital. They were able to inject antibiotics. It quieted down. And then about 6 months ago, I started getting the stabbing pain again. And I was put on antibiotics and told to just keep the eye as moist as possible and wear a mask at night. So I guess, what am I facing here, doctor?
So from what you're describing, and again, I always have to catch everything on the radio. It's hard to diagnose someone over by voice over the radio without being able to see your eye. But sharp pain often comes from the cornea. And the fact that you've had LASIK, you've had a procedure on your cornea, makes you more likely to have things like erosions, where the superficial layer of the cornea gets pulled a little bit and disengages from the underlying structure of the cornea, and that can give you sharp pain. The fact that they put you on antibiotics, there may have been a bacterial infection, which is typically why we put people on antibiotics, which can also give you sharp pain on your cornea. So without actually seeing the eye, it would be hard for me to tell you for sure. If it's not an infection and it's something as simple as the surface of the cornea getting pulled off, that happens a lot of times to people at nighttime while they're sleeping. So you can imagine, while your eyes are closed, the outside of the cornea has a chance to get a little stuck to your eyelid. And so the little outside part, which is kind of like a wallpaper that coats the outside, if it gets stuck to the inside of the eyelid, then all of a sudden you go to open your eyes and it pulls on it and you get that sharp pain first. But that usually happens to people if that's what they're experiencing. It's usually first thing in the morning or right when they wake up and open their eyes. An ointment at bedtime is great for that. There's other procedures.
That's why they asked me to wear a mask.
Yeah, that's probably why they asked you to wear a mask at nighttime, to keep that moisture in there. And there are, depending on where the issue is on the cornea, there are other procedures that can help to prevent it from happening in the future. But that's putting together your story, that sounds like the most likely thing you're describing. But again, I always couch it because it's hard to diagnose over the radio.
Joseph, thanks a lot for the call. It's Dr. David Perlmutter today from Perlmutter Eye Center in Albany, Clifton Park on Troy. Troy's been open, what, about a year now?
A couple years.
Really?
Yeah.
Time flies.
It does.
It's unbelievable. Let's go to Susan in Del Mar. Susan, you're on.
Thank you for taking my call. Dr. Perlmutter, I've had been diagnosed with retinal vein occlusion, and I've had shots since January of last year. And I was wondering if this is a lifelong affliction, or is there something that permanently can be done to correct the situation?
So just to back up a step, a retinal vein occlusion, our blood vessels are like plumbing. The arteries bring blood to the organ, and then the vein takes the blood away.
Yeah.
And so if you get a vein occlusion, a blockage of a vein in the retina, then the plumbing, the drainage mechanism is compromised. And so fluid backs up. And if just a little bit of fluid backs up and doesn't accumulate in any important part of the retina, then sometimes we don't have to do anything. Typically the reason that we end up treating people is that when the fluid backs up, it causes the macular area of the retina, which we were talking about earlier, the center part of the retina, it causes that tissue to swell. And when that tissue swells, it affects how well you see, and it also can cause permanent damage to that central area of the retina, which we don't want because that's the most important part of your vision. So the medicine injections don't get rid of the disease itself. It doesn't get rid of the blood vessel blockage, but it helps to keep that fluid down to preserve the health of the retinal tissue and help preserve the vision. Now, some people need injections ongoing monthly just to keep that swelling down. Other people can get an injection every few months and have that swelling stay under control after usually an initial round of injections to first get that swelling down. And each person's different. So what we most commonly do is test the waters a little bit by spacing the shots. Once someone's under good control, spacing the shots out a little more and then a little more and then a little more, and try to see if we can do it less frequently while still keeping the swelling under control.
Susan.
Is there a laser treatment?
not as commonly done anymore, and it depends on which type of vein occlusion, because there's different types. Okay. There's central retinal vein occlusion, there's branch retinal vein occlusion. There's laser that can be done for branch retinal vein occlusion, but more commonly, because we can't laser the very, very center of the retina, more commonly we use the injectable medicines to control that. And some people can actually at some point stop it and still do very well, but we don't really know until we test the waters and see first if we can just space them out more.
Susan, thanks a lot for the call. Dr. David Perlmutter joins us on this edition of Medical Monday. Speaking of lasers, this is an interesting email. I have no idea what this person is talking about. Andrew wrote in, just read an article about a new color that was seen when scientists shot a certain laser light frequency into the participant's eye. If you're aware of this news, can you comment on how this worked and why the laser in the study doesn't do any damage to the participant's eye? In general, how do lasers damage eyes? Or do they?
So we have a lot of lasers that we use in ophthalmology.
Yeah.
A lot of different types of lasers. But in general, lasers use a certain wavelength of light. And depending on the type, that wavelength of light can react differently to different tissues. So just to pick an example, when we put laser into the retina, which we do intentionally for certain eye diseases, we often use a green laser, and it creates heat with the pigment layer underneath the retina, and it's photocoagulation. It actually creates a little localized heat and causes intentional scarring of the retinal tissue in that area where we put the laser. And we use that to seal around retinal tears, retinal detachments. We use it to in diabetic disease of the eyes. So depending on what color wavelength of light that laser is, someone could see any kind of color. It depends on the laser.
So you're not familiar with this study? Sounds like it might have been performed at a Grateful Dead concert. Wow, man, I'm seeing new colors here. Dr. David Perlmutter is our guest, and let's go to John in West Hampton, Mass. John, you're on.
Good afternoon, doctor. I have a question regarding I had a detached retina, and I also had a macular pucker that just got operated on. The next step is a cataract surgery. I'm concerned about, or I'm trying to figure out, how do they figure out what kind of lenses that they put on in my eye? Because I have a buckle there, I have more of astigmatism now. How do they figure out what my vision should be going forward?
So, John, a couple things on that. When you have a retinal detachment, depending on which part of the retina detaches, if that retina detaches through the center of your vision, where your ability to see the eye chart really drops off dramatically, even after that retina is reattached, it usually leaves behind some damage to the retina tissue. So, the ultimate vision after cataract surgery in that situation really depends on how healthy the retina is. And sometimes that's hard to know exactly what it'll be like until afterwards. So hopefully, you've had a conversation with the ophthalmologist, both the cataract surgeon and the retina specialist, to have an idea of what to expect for your vision afterwards. As far as picking the lens for cataract surgery, the way that we pick lenses, the artificial lens that goes inside the eye with the surgery, is we use machinery in the office that takes measurements of your eye. And it takes measurements of your eye with hundredths of a millimeter accuracy. And so it'll measure things like the curvature of your cornea, the distance between the cornea and the lens of the eye, the thickness of the lens, the distance between the cornea and the retina, as well as the we call it white to white. It's the diameter across the cornea from one part where it's white to the next part where it's white. And those measurements then go into mathematical formulas. And the mathematical formulas have been thankfully refined and modified over the last few decades. And they say, okay, for this eyeball with these parameters, this strength of artificial lens should give this type of vision. So for targeting distance vision for someone, it'll say the strength should give you this outcome. Or for targeting closer vision, the strength of lens should give this outcome. And the formulas have gotten really good. So, usually we can be very accurate with this. And ultimately, for you, like you were saying, the end result will also depend on the health of the retina.
John.
So I'm also concerned that my golf game got really good in between these two operations.
I don't know.
But
man.
Now I'm concerned that I'm not going to see the same, and I'm actually going to see different kind of balls going different distances, and I can't see the ball much after 150 yards. But yeah, my golf game got a little bit better. I just don't want to lose that.
Well, as a general rule of thumb with cataract surgery, most of the time you don't really have to do it. You know, if you wait on it, nothing permanently bad happens in the meantime. There are some exceptions here and there, of course. But so if you're having the best golf game of your life and you're pretty happy with how things are going, then, you know, maybe kick the can down the road a few months.
John, thanks for the call. Dr. David Perlmutter is our guest today. Here's one from R.H. in Endicott. My wife has recurring problem with her left eye, turning all the way into the center, and after many tests, seeing a neurologist, ophthalmologist, getting MRIs, etc., it was finally decided to be cranial nerve number 6, affected by an unknown microvascular issue not showing up on MRIs of the orbit, eye, brain, etc. The first two times, over a year and a half, it went away after a couple weeks, but this time, no change at 6 weeks. Could it be permanent? When would a surgical or optical option be considered? It's difficult for her to read, watch TV, etc. We don't know how this might be resolved. That sounds interesting. Do you know anything about this?
Yeah, a little bit. So the cranial nerves come out of the brainstem. So they come out of your brain. They travel through small passageways up to the eyes.
This is separate from the optic nerve?
Correct.
Okay.
Correct. The optic nerve is one of the cranial nerves. But there's a set of cranial nerves that are responsible for the movement of the eyes.
Okay.
And there are cranial nerves that do other things as well. But specifically for the cranial nerves that are responsible for eye movements, they come out of the brain and they travel towards the eye and they attach themselves to the muscles that are around the eyes that move the eyes in different directions. And so there's patterns to those movements depending on which cranial nerve. Some cranial nerves only move one eye muscle. Some move multiple eye muscles at once. And then ultimately the brain has to coordinate those movements so that the muscles from one eye are moving in concert with the muscles from the other eye. So probably take this for granted, but when one eye is looking to the right, the other eye, when one eye is looking out towards the temple, the other eye has to be looking in towards the nose so that they travel together. And so on one side, it's a different movement than what's happening on the other side. And the brain keeps all that in check and keeps everything coordinated for you until something intervenes that causes a problem.
Yeah.
So when you're describing a microvascular issue with one of the cranial nerves, this happens most commonly in people with blood vessel risk factors like diabetes or high blood pressure, and it can cause what's like a little mini stroke or a blood vessel, lack of blood flow to one of those cranial nerves, and then the cranial nerve gets injured, and whatever muscle that or muscles that cranial nerve was responsible for moving, the eye will have trouble moving in those directions. And it'll create an issue with the coordination of the two eyes as well. And so often that gives people double vision. They see two things. So things that you can do, most of the time when it's a blood vessel related issue for the cranial nerve, it regenerates, you know, often over the course of a few months, which it sounds like it has in the past. And this
time, 6 weeks is not out of the question.
6 weeks is not out of the question. But at the same time, if it's recurring, you know, you want to, again, make sure there's nothing else that could be doing this because there are other things that can affect the health of the cranial nerves. So, you know, maybe revisiting with the neurologist and the ophthalmologist and making sure that you've addressed all of the possibilities there. And then otherwise it's controlling, if it's just related to blood flow, then it's controlling those risk factors for blood vessel health, like blood pressure, cholesterol, diabetes. And then for comfort in the meantime, when you're having this issue, typically the problem is the double vision. And if you cover one of the eyes, the double vision goes away.
Yeah.
So a lot of times just for comfort, you know, you just get an eye patch you can find at the local pharmacy and just cover it when it's uncomfortable.
That's, this was very specific. Optic or not optic, but nerve number 6. And I assume that the doctor that will be joining you in November is sort of an expert in this sort of thing.
Yeah.
A neuro-ophthalmologist. At what point does a brain surgeon have to be called in?
So for this, not unless the reason for the issue is related to something that could be intervened in the brain. So some people can have growths in the brain, tumors, or other processes that happen that affect the health of one of these nerves. And if it's something that can be intervened surgically, then a neurosurgeon would be the person that does that.
Right.
But in this situation, if it's just a blood flow issue, It's just about maximizing blood vessel risk factors.
All right, let's take a quick break here. We'll get back to our phones. 800-348-2551 is the number. Yeah, it's Dr. David Perlmutter from Perlmutter Eye Center. We'll be back. Todd Nelson from his latest here on Vox Pop. Ray Graff with you. Medical Monday, 800-348-2551 is the number. Dr. David Perlmutter is our guest. And this one is from Alain, who wants to know, I have recently diagnosed unspecified pterygium of my right eye. Please explain and discuss treatment care options. What's pterygium? What is that?
Pterygium is a growth of the tissue that covers the white part of the eye. So the white part of the eye is called the sclera, and then there's a thin capsule over that called Tenon's capsule, and then the skin that overlies that called the conjunctiva. And you don't often notice it's even there because it's translucent, so you just notice the white part of the eye.
Okay.
And a pterygium is an abnormal growth of that tissue where the tissue starts to proliferate, and then it starts to grow onto the cornea. And so if you were to look at someone or look in the mirror, what you would typically see is either like a reddish or whitish color that you might notice is over the colored part of your eye. It's not actually inside your eye on the colored part, but that's just the appearance of what it looks like in the mirror. And it's related to sun exposure, ultraviolet light exposure.
Right.
So and you know, in upstate New York, we don't often have this issue. For better or for worse with our weather. But if you get down closer to the equator and you're outside a lot, it's much more common. And so with a lot of ultraviolet light exposure, that tissue can start to grow or proliferate.
Huh.
And most of the time, if it's just a little bit, it's not a big deal. It might just cause a little irritation because you've got one little area that's raised relative to the rest of the tissue, and that area tends to dry out or get irritated.
Oh, yeah.
And lubricant drops can typically settle that down, just over-the-counter lubricant drops. But people who have that, you know, you want to make sure you're protecting the eyes from ultraviolet light so that it doesn't get worse. So, you know, UV protection for sunglasses when you're outside. But if that tissue grows in towards the center of your cornea enough, it can actually get into the part of your cornea that plays a role in your vision.
Well, that would not be good.
And if that happens, then it typically has to be surgically removed.
Ah, okay. And is that a relatively simple surgery?
Yeah, it's pretty straightforward.
Although I don't know how anything to do with the eye would be simple surgery. You guys amaze me. Catherine in Newburgh writes, my 59-year-old sister was just diagnosed with arthritis of her eyes after having sudden sharp pain, light sensitivity, large black floaters. Would you explain the causes and treatment options? Gotta say, Dr. Perlmutter, I have never heard of arthritis in the eyes, ever.
So I'm gonna change the language just a little bit.
Okay.
There are diseases in the body that can also affect the eyes. And I think what you're getting at here, and again, I'll always couch it by saying we have to interpret what we're hearing on the radio and then try to understand the language that you're using and then, you know, extrapolate from there.
Yeah.
But certain diseases in the body, especially diseases that you'd classify as autoimmune diseases, which are diseases where your immune system gets a little confused. You know, your immune system is supposed to be fighting off bacteria, viruses, things that get into our body from the outside world. And occasionally it gets confused and it responds to our own body tissue. So there are a number of diseases that people have typically heard of that are all in this category, like rheumatoid arthritis, where the immune system attacks joint tissue, or Crohn's disease, where the immune system attacks gastrointestinal tissue.
Yeah.
And so someone with, I'm assuming in this case, rheumatoid arthritis, which is in this category of diseases, the immune system can also get confused and respond to tissue in the eye. And if that happens, usually you can get various manifestations from it, but a common manifestation would be inflammation inside the eye. Inflammation makes the iris, the colored part of the eye, sensitive. And anytime there's light your iris or your pupil contracts, and when it's dark out, it dilates. And so often when there's light in the eye and the pupil has to constrict, the muscle of the iris has to fire, and that makes it hurt because it's inflamed. So I think that's what you're getting at there, which is a manifestation of a disease in the body that can also occur in the eye.
When this is separate from that, but you brought up dilation and contraction of the iris, right? How does that work? Is that a physical thing, or is the nerve somewhere in the brain just cutting down like an f-stop on a camera?
It's a little bit of both. So when light goes into the eye, the retina converts it into the electrical signal, sends it via the optic nerve to the brain, and then the brain sends that information through a different set of nerves back to the eyes that control the muscles of the iris. And
amazing.
So it's telling the iris muscle, there's light, we're sensing a lot of light, okay, constrict the pupil. And it happens, you know, clearly rapidly, very, very fast.
Yeah. All right, so one more email, then we'll go back to the phones. Dr. David Perlmutter is our guest from Perlmutter Eye Center in Albany, Clifton Park, and Troy. The number is 800-348-2551. Garrett writes in, could you maybe explain seeing stars? At times, usually when exerting extreme energy, I see stars, dots of white light that can flicker on and off. I've always found it interesting. What exactly are these stars? And can you explain the process as to why they happen and what exactly I'm seeing? And that's from Garrett.
That's a good question. I might not be able to explain
really?
Why you see stars. There are a lot of things that you can see in your vision at times. You know, if you ever just close your eyes for a period of time and then open them quickly, you'll notice things. And so
you've seen the cartoons, though, right? Where
yeah.
a guy gets hit in the head and then there are stars flying around.
Yeah, absolutely.
Let me tell you something. This happens. One time I was riding my bike. I was in high school and I was coming home. It was late. The road was kind of, you know, nobody wore helmets then. And the road was kind of wet. I tumbled and my head hit the pavement. And I literally saw stars and said, wow, it's just like the cartoons. So what is that neurological?
So if you're talking about an injury to your head, yeah, it's more neurological typically. But you can get, if you're talking about flashes of light, like little lightning strikes, those can come from the retina. And when you say seeing stars, if that's what you're referring to, you want to get your eyes dilated and someone take a look at the retina inside, you know, immediately. People with migraine headaches sometimes will get what we call aura, which is a visual phenomenon, and it can be like a shimmering light sometimes, or someone might describe that as stars.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's actually generated more from the brain than the eyes. And people can get that even without the actual headache part of migraine. You can get visual phenomenon from diseases and any other disease in the retina, sometimes just from blood vessel blockages, things like that. So there's a whole host of reasons. So,
but if Garrett's exerting himself, you're not exactly sure why that's happening.
That's hard to say, yeah.
I would say this, Garrett, don't exert yourself. Just relax, my friend. Rebecca's in Falls Village. Rebecca.
Hey, thanks for taking my call.
You bet.
Doctor, I have some complicated eyes. I had RK about 35 years ago. I was diagnosed 18 years ago with RP, retinitis pigmentosa, and then, and fortunately, that's stable. I did have cataracts removed about 8 years ago, and then about 18, and so my vision has been pretty stable for the last, you know, 18 or so years. And then about 18 months ago, my vision started getting blurry. So now I have a dry eye doctor, and that's been treated. And but the blurriness and the RP combined is, you know, obviously affecting my vision. But we can't seem to figure out where the blurriness is coming from. Is there anything I should be exploring?
So blurriness in the vision can be related to any part of your eye. You know, just having RK itself.
What's RK?
RK is radial keratotomy. So before there was LASIK, where we could use a laser to reshape the cornea, and a crude way of explaining it is it's like stamping your glasses prescription to your eye with a laser. Before that was available and common, you know, commonly done, there was a procedure called radial keratotomy, and it was for people who are very nearsighted, and you can make these little radial – this is actually before my time, and I see patients with it now, but
yeah.
I never did it because no one
right. –
it wasn't really done once I was in
ready
kind of
to
training.
Rock, yeah.
And it's manual cuts in the cornea, kind of like bicycle spokes. You make them radially.
Yep.
And it changes the shape of the cornea to give someone less need for glasses for their distance vision. The downside of that procedure is – it creates irregularities in your cornea. So you can have blurry vision just from an irregular cornea on its own, which sometimes is actually can be better with a contact lens than a pair of glasses. You can have, like you mentioned, dry eye issues. You can have scarring on your cornea from RK. There could be something with the artificial lens that you had with cataract surgery or that film we were discussing earlier. It could be a retina issue. And there's a whole host of things that could be making your vision blurry, or it could just be you need a pair of glasses. You know, it can be as simple as that or as complicated as some other things.
Rebecca.
Yeah, I've tried scleral lenses, but I have a mucus that forms under them, and I have a regular retina. I have four different eye doctors, so between my team, we can't kind of figure out what's going on. Mm-hmm. So I just wondered if could it possibly be something neurological? I know the RK has a long term. Now we're learning a long term effect, but I can't wear the scleral lenses to help with that and because of the mucus. And so I'm just trying to we're all trying to sort out where this is all coming from.
Yeah. Does your vision get better when you put this, at least temporarily, when you put the scleral lens on?
No, I can't even get fitted for them because of the film that is created. So I've never tried them because I can't see through even the experimental ones.
Oh, that's too bad, because that would be a nice diagnostic test, right? If you could put a lens on the eye, on the outside of the eye, that could sharpen your vision up. You know it's nothing else inside the eye.
Oh, that's true. All right. Yeah. Well, Rebecca, thanks a lot for the call. So in RK, you're putting slits, or you in the old days, slits in the cornea.
Yeah, you're
and
cutting.
Does that remove the pressure?
It changes the shape.
But, I mean, why does it change shape to begin with? Is it pressure that's pulling it in one direction or the other?
So your cornea is a structure, and there's an internal eye pressure, kind of like that creates like a balloon. It keeps your eye inflated, and then the curvature of your cornea is related to your natural anatomy of your eye.
But why would that change?
Once you cut it?
No, why would you need to put the slits in the cornea?
Oh, okay. So if your eye doesn't focus light perfectly, then you wear glasses to change the way that your eye focuses light so that you can see well. And the cornea is 2/3 of the power of the eye for focusing light. The lens inside the eye is another third. So the cornea plays a huge role in the way that your eye focuses light. And so if your eye is not focusing light in a way that that makes your vision perfect without glasses, and you have to wear glasses, a couple decades ago, if you wanted to try to have less need for glasses, they can make cuts in the cornea to change the shape of the cornea so that it would focus light ideally better without glasses on.
And the old days, they did this with a scalpel?
With a special blade.
That is terrifying. Let's go to the next call. We'll go to Elaine in Galway. Elaine, you're on.
Hello. Thank you for taking my call.
You bet.
Dr. Perlmutter, here's my question, or here's my situation. I had cataract surgery a couple of years ago, and because I'm a senior citizen on Medicare, so because of the kind of problem that, I needed to have special lenses inserted when I had the surgery, Medicare paid for that, and my vision was so much better. I mean, it was unbelievable after the surgery. But now, a couple of years down the road, it's not as good anymore. So obviously the obvious answer is to go see your doctor. But I'm just wondering, I'm on Social Security with Medicare for my health issues, and I'm just wondering if Medicare pays for, what kind of eye issues does Medicare pay for?
So this is a great question. I'm really glad you're asking this question, because most people get confused with their insurance coverage and what it means when it comes to eyes. So most people have heard the term vision insurance, and we should change that name to glasses and contacts insurance.
Yeah.
Because the only thing that vision insurance works with is glasses, contacts, and a routine eye exam to give you a prescription for those. Everything else that can affect your eye goes under medical insurance. Those are all, everything else is considered a medical issue with the eye, a cataract, a retina problem, you know, macular degeneration, a neurologic problem, anything that's not glasses or contacts is a medical disease of the eye and goes under your regular medical insurance and is covered by insurance for the most part, in the same way that it would be covered if you went to your primary care doctor or a cardiologist. You know, each plan is obviously different, so people have different copays, things like that, but there's no frequency limitation, so there's no restriction on the number of times that you can see your doctor for medical diseases of the eye. Whereas vision insurance, or again, I'll say glasses contacts insurance, might say, oh, you can only get your glasses every 2 years. But sometimes people think that that is the same for their medical insurance when it comes to the eyes, and they're avoiding their doctor because they think it's not going to get covered. But medical insurance for the eyes, you know, your regular medical insurance covers any issue that you're having with your vision that's not specifically glasses and contacts.
All right, Elaine, thanks a lot. Let's go to Jim in Matamoros. Jim, you're on with David Perlmutter.
Is it ever too late to do cataract surgery, or can laser soften the lens enough so it can be done? And what's the status of non-surgical cataract removal now?
So, Jim, if you ever ask a doctor a question with the words always or never, you're always going to get a couched answer. For the most part, we can almost always take the cataract out, regardless of how long you waited. If you wait a really long time until the cataract gets, the lens in your eye gets so cloudy that you can't see anything out of it, we call it a mature cataract, like where, you know, you look at someone and you can see the in their pupil just looks white.
Mm-hmm.
The complication rate gets a little higher in that situation. But again, most of the time it's not an issue. And then there are some very rare circumstances where, you know, someone lets a cataract go, they can't see anything, and it gets hypermature, and some of the proteins leak out of the lenses and things like that. But that's really uncommon.
All right, Jim, thanks a lot. Very quickly to Kristen in Albany. Kristen, you have about 30 seconds. Go ahead.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. Hi, Dr. Perlmutter.
Hi, Kristen.
I started a couple years ago with floaters in my right eye, developed dry eye, and now they say I have early cataracts. Recently, I had a bunch of new floaters in my left eye. Anyway, my vision is kind of not very good compared to how it used to be. I'm 56. I don't know if that matters, but it's kind of like looking through a pair of cloudy, like dirty eyeglasses a lot of the time. And my eyes are kind of leaky. Even though they say they're dry, I feel like there's tears in there or something in there that I have to get out. I use Eyevisia eye drops multiple times a day, more than they tell me to. But that doesn't really seem to take care of it. So I was just wondering if there's anything I can do to make my eyes more comfortable. And also, I know you can't give me fill without seeing me. You can't, you know, say for sure. But like, and if I should start pursuing cataract surgery.
So, Kristen, it all depends on what the reason is for the blurry vision, right? If the cataracts are the reason for blurry vision, then cataract surgery makes sense for someone.
Yeah.
If it's other things, then, you know, you have to address the actual problem that's contributing to it. Just to answer your question about dry eyes, we always sound a little funny when we tell someone they have dry eyes and their primary symptom is that their eyes are watering.
Yeah.
But what I usually tell people is it's the surface of your eye and it's the most sensitive part of your body. And when it has to stay lubricated for you to see well and for it to be comfortable. So if it gets dry or it gets irritated, the outside of the eye will tell your tear glands to go crazy and make as much tear as possible. And so then you feel like you're tearing or you have water around your eyes, but a lot of times the reason that it all happened in the first place is that the eyes were dry.
All right, thanks for that call. Appreciate it, Kristen. Elaine writes in, don't be so dismissive. I, too, read a story in the New York Times that said a team of vision scientists at UC Berkeley developed a procedure with a laser where they stimulated only the M cone cells in the eye and allowed 5 participants to see a color that cannot be seen with the naked eye. I was the one who was dismissive. I made the crack about the Grateful Dead concert. You just didn't know, right?
You know, that's a little extra detail, though, right there, that they were stimulating a very specific cell in the eye, as opposed to a general laser question, which is a little more
zapping a laser in the eye like Goldfinger. Hey, man, thanks for being here. How do people find out about your practice?
Standard Google. We have office phone numbers.
What's the website?
Perlmuttereyecenter.com.
All right.
Perlmuttereyecenter.com. and has all of our practice information there.
We'll see you soon. Support comes from Guido's Fresh Marketplace, Pittsfield and Great Barrington, local family-owned grocery store since 1979, hosting Community Day May 1st in both stores with tastings, music, and treats, and more. Guido'sFreshMarketplace.com. All right, thanks to engineer Zach Malloy, Ed Rosen screened the calls. I'm Ray Graff. Tomorrow, we welcome back Greg Olson from the New York State Office for the Aging. We'll talk about aging together. We'll see you tomorrow at 2:00.